Some of the world's greatest stories are told through song. We tell the stories about those who give us these songs. Not all the songs are great, but God damn do these guys make it interesting. You are now listening to Voluble Radio Podcast.
Welcome to Voluble Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Mike, and with me co-hosting, as always, is Ryan.
Hello.
And we also have our producer, Rich.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it
Secretary
real, Richie.
Keeping it real right there, Richie.
And today we are talking about the streets. Not the literal streets, but The English rapper, Mike Skinner, the streets.
Oh.
And I would say that he's like the English version of Eminem.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's how I heard it described to me when I first heard of him. I want to say 2002, maybe on MTV News or something. They did a piece on him.
Is that that's funny. Like 2002. Okay, so we were like in high school. I didn't even know anything about this guy. I think I found out about him through Rich, actually.
Yeah, that's where I started hearing more about him. But I heard him from MTV2 or something.
Interesting.
And they had like a little 5-minute documentary thing about him. And it was Let's Push Things Forward was the song they were playing.
Boom, 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 boom. It's got a very like reggae dub kind of thing.
But the way
going
it was doing it just didn't feel like right, like flowing well. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just made me feel like, ooh, that's, I do not like that. But then Rich had the CD of more stuff, and I was like, oh, his stuff is all kind of like that, like
right,
like chopped up and like kind of fucked with. So I kind of got into it, in like 2003.
It was weird the first time. Like, I actually heard this. For people that aren't familiar with the streets, the style, his rapping style is more like spoken word.
Yeah.
It's not really like rapping.
At first, you're probably going to be like, oh, this is awful. At first glance. But then you actually listen to it and get into it. You're like, oh, no, this is fucking actually awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's very weird the way
it's different.
It's so different that at first you just think, no, it's no good. It just doesn't sound right. It's not flowing right, or something's weird with his cadence or his flow. But then the more you get into it, you're like, no, I get it, and it's fucking actually pretty good.
Yeah, the way that I would describe Mike Skinner to people that don't know this guy, and if you do know Mike Skinner, he was probably most famous for that song, You're Fit, But Don't You Know It.
My God, don't you just know it?
I know you all. Yeah, so Mike Skinner's probably like England's response to Eminem. You know, like, in the sense where...
Twice.
What, say that again?
You said that already. But...
I said that already? Yeah. Oof. All right, hold for edit. But, like, in the sense where, like, Eminem was always, like, kind of true to himself. Like, he wasn't trying to... When Eminem first came out, he wasn't about, like, the street life kind of thing. He wasn't trying to play a persona. But he was talking about things that were real in his life. You know, drug culture... even like he makes references to like punk rock and rock culture and stuff. Mike Skinner, you know, he blew up in England because he was very like true to, I guess the only way you could describe it is geezer lifestyle.
Oh, geezer.
Owie. Yo, wicked geezer. No, I don't know if they say wicked there.
And geezers look at me funny. Bounce them around like bunnies.
Yeah. So like for those that don't know geezer lifestyle, it's just like. Like pub culture, like just a regular guy that like goes out drinking, goes out smoking, whatever. Like
Geezer Butler from Sabbath, for instance.
Spoke to the mic. Geezer, yeah. All the songs were about Geezer Butler from Sabbath, I believe, actually.
Damn.
But yeah, he was like, you know, Mike Skinner, always true to his roots. I think in England, he was really super popular.
Yeah, he never really broke here.
Yeah, in the States here, you know, when I heard him, he was just kind of like a novelty kind of thing.
Did you hear him through, like, just us playing it? Or, like,
just from, I heard him via you and Rich.
Yeah.
You know, I think the first song I heard was, so he has this rap song where he kind of debates with himself the idea of alcohol versus pot, I guess it is.
The irony of it all.
The irony of it all. And... he plays a character where he's rapping as a stoner kind of guy. I make bongs with my engineering degree. And the other guy's just like kind of pubbed up English guy. He's like, oi, I'm a law-abiding citizen and blah, 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 right? Yeah, and the first time I heard that, I was like, okay, I mean, that's funny, but I don't, can't see myself.
And you can tell the way, like, the way it's beat, the chopped up of him talking, like, he said it all straight through, mm-hmm. and they chopped it up. It feels like the way, I don't know, listen to it, and the way it's, like, very choppy, the vocals.
It's, that choppiness kind of plays into a genre of music that kind of came out of England, too, which is a little bit different than, if you're familiar with, like, European electronic music, like, England's got its own, like, electronic music, dance music, subcategories that are...
Yeah.
The subcategories that go under dance music is a list that goes on forever and ever and ever. So, like, Skinner kind of came up with this sound that was coming out in Britain called... I think it's called UK Garage. So when I saw that, I think of, like, garage bands, you know? Just, like, garage rock in the States would be, like, I don't know, the Stooges or something like that. Like, that, like, kind of punk rock, not really. But UK Garage is more of this, they took, for those familiar with Massive Attack or something like that, they took that sound and they kind of made it more, like, choppy, a little bit different sounding, you know?
More upbeat, dancey?
Yeah, kind of. Like, there was already, like, an upbeat, dancey kind of thing going on there, but UK Garage was more... It took all the elements
dirtier?
Yeah, it dirtier. That's a good... It was more underground. Mm. It took all the elements that were popular in dance music already and kind of made it into this more... Like how you said, like, dirtier, more like...
Like Prodigy's dirty?
Actually, Prodigy's huge influence of Mike Skinner, too, when he was a kid. And... yeah, it just kind of evolved into this own sign. It took R&B, it took hip-hop, it took dance, took all these elements and made it into its own kind of interesting sound. You know, doing the research on this, I'm like, UK Garage by itself is very cool. I kind of I walked into this episode thinking, eh, Mike Skinner, whatever, I don't really give a fuck. And then walked away from it like, wow, that was really unique and really different than something that I'm usually used to. Just an overall idea, like how did you feel about the streets before, like, looking at the show notes, going over this stuff?
I liked them. I have, I only listened to, I guess it's the first three albums I have, and I like them. Mm. I haven't got, didn't he only make six?
I believe
like
it's...
Like six studio albums?
I think it's, he had a five album deal, but I think he did six, yeah.
All right, yeah, I didn't. I have Apple Music since then, so I tried listening to them, and I couldn't really get into them.
Gotcha.
But the first three, I love.
Yeah, the first three albums are really, really cool. Like,
was it original pirate music?
Original pirate material.
Material. Then it was Grand Don't Come for Free.
Grand Don't Come for Free.
And then...
Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living.
Those are the ones I have.
And, he kind of built this, like, whole culture around himself, too. I think... Mike Skinner was also kind of declared the first true English rapper because his style is very – I mean, he goes right into all the lingo that comes from Britain like that. Oi, geezer culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, he – but he also, like, always rapped about stuff that were real to him.
You know,
I think he, like, kind of started off more a little bit trying to mimic, like, the American street sound of – American hip-hop, but then kind of found his own place when he was just being himself.
Yeah.
So in that sense, that's where I would compare him to Eminem, where Eminem, I feel like, came to the, you know, the pinnacle of rap, so to speak, because, you know, he was a little bit different than what everybody else was doing at the time.
Yeah.
You know? But just to get into the timeline, so Mike Skinner grew up in West Heath, Birmingham, England.
Ooh.
Oi. And it's more of like a blue-collar, more working-class kind of thing. The thing that's interesting about England, I've always found interesting about England, is that they are more...
Musically.
Well, yeah, musically, it's like weird. They have like, I guess because England's a lot older than America, maybe they're more like in with the music, like they have a better idea of... culture of music, structure of music. It's been with him for a lot longer. So Mike Skinner, he starts playing keyboards at age five. By age 7, he was dabbling with guitar. So,
Lil Hendrix, they called him.
Actually, he was a huge fan of Hendrix. He actually had posters of the guy.
All English people are, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny about Hendrix is he did get popular in England first before he even got popular in America.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, he just liked the idea of Hendrix because, for the same reason, all English people like the idea of Hendrix. He was this outside-the-box kind of guy and very artful, very serious about his craft. He gets – so the Streets being more of like a hip-hop kind of UK garage dance kind of band, he starts getting into hip-hop because he steals a lot of his older brother's records.
Ooh.
His two
– Geezer, get out of here. Geezer, more records. Wait, is that maybe Australian? Is that how it went?
That's a pretty good English accent, I would think. Oi, governor. His two favorite groups –
Scallywag.
Scallywag. His two favorite groups were Run DMC and the Beastie Boys.
Hmm.
And what he would do at a very young age is he would take like a dual tape recorder kind of thing, and he would record just the intro to Run DMC songs, and he would start to rap over them. So when he was a kid, his style was very much of like, say, Biggie or Wu-Tang Clan or something like that. So he didn't have this like spoken art kind of style first. Like, so picture an English guy. Like, I don't even think he would try to rap with the English accent.
Oh, really? Did you hear any of this?
No. You can't find any of these early recordings online anywhere. I mean, you might. I'm sure he had tapes or something's out there that you can find. But
I didn't find it.
But yeah, he would just loop these things. He would rap of them. And this gave him like a very early idea of like how to do musical manipulation. He didn't really have any formal training either. So
how old is he?
This would put him at about like 13 years old, maybe. All
right.
He starts doing these things.
Start doing that.
And like I said, like, so he grew up pretty middle class. He wasn't poor necessarily. I think his father was a salesman and his mother
was a geezer.
Was a geezer, I believe. Or a scallywag.
She might have been a bloke. Wait, no, that's I think also. Fuck Australian. Might be.
And the funny thing about his neighborhood is that it didn't really encourage artistic expression. So, yeah, so it was weird because, like, if he had come out more openly about his musical endeavors, people would have, like, slammed him right from the beginning. Like, oi, you're some kind of artist, aren't you? What are you, some kind of art guy, right?
Yeah, that was the word they used.
Yeah, art guy. I'm sure there was some
call cigarettes fags, but they wouldn't use any other words like that.
Yeah. Oi, you're a dirty cigarette, aren't you? So, yeah, the way that I saw that it was described was that the view of being artistic like that was very self-indulgent and feminine.
Yeah, I could see that, like, the way people would do that here, even.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, it's weird, like, blue-collar guys here that get into music and art, I think of, like, the Ramones or I think of, like, the punk scene where people were almost cheering you on. You know, like, if you were, like, when I read that, I literally thought
scene,
of the Ramones.
Like heroin and, like...
Wait, say that one more time?
I think of the punk scene, I just think of, like, heroin and, like, not having a job or being any kind of, like, blue collar. You're kind of, like, just a bum. If you're a good punk band, at least. You're probably a bum for most of it.
Yeah, we don't have, like, the class clashing that I think England has. Like, it's very
way more.
Yeah, that's the impression I get from England is that they have this whole, like, upper class, middle class, lower class, working class. And it's just, like, I found it just very interesting that, you know, this kid obviously has a talent from a very early age and would have been just completely discouraged if he put himself out there kind of thing. In school, he was pretty average all the way through, more or less. He wasn't very athletic. He played football, I believe.
Oh.
English football.
Oh.
Otherwise known as soccer. Yeah, he, you know, as far as his grades went, he was very middle of the road.
Standard Englishman.
Standard Englishman. So, you know, he didn't really have like a musical academic background at all. He was self-taught. More self-taught. Yeah, self-taught.
So that's making sense now.
And it was because he was self-taught that it kind of gave him more of, like, the freedom to really express himself. Like, he had an idea of, like, what loops were.
Yeah.
But he wasn't bogged down to the classical structure.
They had to, yeah, be a fucking beat, like a timing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That, like, wasn't an issue.
And that's what kind of gave into his own style, too. Like, right. His rapping style was more of that spoken word.
Yeah,
so,
I can see that, yeah.
You know, it all helped him along the way. He just had a love for his own personal music. So, you know, doing the research on this guy, I was like, it's very inspirational when somebody can go against the grain like this and still be successful despite the fact. So from an early age, so he's about like 13, maybe 14, and he converted his bedroom into a recording booth.
Ooh.
And he would do like
karaoke.
I said,
basically.
Basically karaoke. He would take these beats, loop them. I think he would get like random rappers that were in the English scene to come to the bedroom.
Slick Rick?
Yes, Slick Rick.
Slick Rick was like a Michael Jackson going to his room laying down beats at 15.
Yeah, Slick Rick would come over. They were just
doing... So, yeah, why would Slick Rick? Wouldn't he be like a first English rapper that was... Or is he not English?
He's English, but he didn't start rapping until he got to New York.
Oh, so he's a New York rapper.
He's a New York rapper, right. And, you know, there were rappers in England beforehand, but I think the thing with rap in England was that
they didn't have an Eminem.
Well, it's kind of plays into the same thing with like English singing too, where you don't try to sound English when you sing. You're more about trying to hit the center of the note. You're more
like Bush doesn't really sound English when he sings.
I think Bush sounds very English when they sing that. Spikes coming down a mountain.
No, I don't think he does that.
No, he doesn't do that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so...
Oasis, I think, does that, right?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Well, that kind of plays into the class kind of war... I don't know, warfare, but...
What about
like,
the Beatles?
It's not the Beatles,
really dissect
yeah.
this.
It would be like, okay, like, from what I was reading, like, people that were more blue-collar or working class were fans of Oasis because they came from Manchester, which was more... working class, but people that were fan of, say, Blur were more artsy, so they were looked at as a upper class kind of thing. Right. And I just find that very...
What about Bush?
I don't know a lot about Bush except that the guy was with Gwen Stefani. That's really...
That's a future episode, fellas.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, he was in Constantine. That was a pretty decent movie. I like that.
Yeah, wasn't everybody?
Man, it was alright. So, yeah, so he's got this recording booth in his parents' bedroom. It was Wu-Tang that kind of pushed him forward to be a musical artist. He liked the idea that their sampling style. He liked the whole, I guess you could say Wu-Tang had a shtick because they had the whole martial arts thing kind of going with them too, right? And I think he compared himself... He said that his favorite rapper in Wu-Tang was Raekwon, if anybody's a fan of Wu-Tang out there, but that he compared himself more to RZA because RZA was more of a producer and couldn't really rap.
All right.
So, yeah.
Do you agree with his
I would agree with
view
that.
On?
Because Mike Skinner's beats are fucking awesome. I really do love his production quality. His rapping style, you know, it's okay. It's all right. You know, he's got some interesting stuff, but he's no Raekwon the Chef. Anyway, he started...
He's more of like a Raekyon from...
Raekyon from CKY. So he started making demos, and he's about like 15 at this point, and he starts sending them out to different record labels and stuff, but he's not getting any feedback.
I could understand why.
I think people weren't ready for...
I could picture a 15-year-old Mike Skinner making beats in his closet and me being like, pass.
Yeah.
He's like, is this just Run DMC half looped and then...
Yeah, and then you're just kind of going like, oi, oi, hello.
Oi, oi, listen, blokes.
But it was like, I don't know, it was his very stripped down, very real, relatable lyrics that people got into him for. But so he also starts producing music for English hip-hop, like I said. And this is where Garage UK or UK Garage is starting to get very popular. So he starts doing this amalgamation of all these different kinds of dance beats and hip hop beats. And, you know, he's not really getting anywhere, but he.
How old is he?
15.
Oh, he's still 15?
15, yeah. So now he finishes up secondary education, which would be the equivalent of high school here in the States, I guess.
15?
Yeah, in England they finish a lot earlier, actually.
Shit.
Yeah. I think it's because...
They don't take so many playtime and nap times like us?
No, definitely not.
I had nap time up until 8th grade.
No, you fucking didn't. Get the fuck out of here. Nap time up to 8th grade. So he goes to college at Sutton Coldfield.
So English.
In Sutton Coldfield, England. While he's at school, he starts taking up different fast food jobs. And, you know, he's starting to get this idea that maybe I should start my own record label. Probably because nobody's getting back to him on the demos. He eventually moves to North London. And this is where the Garage UK scene is getting really big. So Garage UK really starts in about, like, maybe 94. Just post the album Blue Lines by Massive Attack.
Right.
And the thing about it is, so he's very into this Garage UK, but he misses this first wave because he gets involved with some girl and moves to Australia.
Oh, that's where my Australian accent came into play.
But she dumps him when he moves there, so yeah, kind of rough. And this, like I said, so
the name's Kiefer.
Keefe with an A. So it's because he moves out to Australia. He actually misses the first wave of Garage UK blowing up.
Typical.
And he almost doesn't get famous because of this, because Garage UK eventually kind of fizzles out into two-step and what's called speed garage.
Ooh.
Yeah. But when he gets back to the UK, this is where he finds out that the sound is mirage is emerging. Again, he starts working a slew of dead end jobs. He works at BK UK, Burger King UK, and I think he's working at a gas station right now.
Right now?
Not right. At this point in the storyline.
Oh.
And he's using this money to fund his music idea.
I hear they're calling petroleum fill-up tanks there.
Oi. Oi, could you fill it up petroleum, please?
10 quid?
10 quid, please. I love that. 10 quid is awesome. Quid is such a great name. Finally, he saves enough, and he buys some gear, and he actually steals a couple mics, too, from somewhere. And I'm not sure
if he goes... Mic-on-mic action.
What is it?
Mic-on-mic crime.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure if he goes back to his parents' home or he's got his own spot, but he does the same kind of thing where he converts his bedroom into a recording studio. So up until this point, he's sticking with that American style of rapping. So he's trying to sound like the rappers that he really likes. He's trying to emulate that sound.
And no one wants to hear that in England?
It's run-of-the-mill. It's just very boring. Everybody's trying to do this, like, from what I was reading, everyone that was a quote-unquote rapper in England was trying to do, like, the, like, I sell pounds of this, and I sling shit on the streets, and he kind of looks at it, and he's like, this is really boring, you know, like, this is what everybody does, you're not even being real to yourself, you live in some,
yeah,
I don't know what you call them.
Flat.
It just, we obviously have no education of English slang here, but... Yeah, like the equivalent, I guess, would you call it a village or something instead of a suburb? I don't know. Just talking about that people. But, yeah, so he ditches this American style, and he gets his own natural speaking voice is where he's really starting to come into his own. So rather than portray this street life content that everybody's doing, he wants to do something more authentic, and he starts doing raps about everyday life, like, I guess, like, getting a beer at the pub and maybe some chips and maybe...
Geezers, the encounters?
Geezers that he talks about. Soccer that he watches on TV.
Football,
like
you mean.
Yeah, exactly, football. So eventually he records his first big single, and Skinner claims this was his homage
Johnson. Oh, homage. I think he said Ahmed.
Is that the wrestler?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Pearl River Dropper. Yeah. So this is his homage to DJ Premier, which is, if people know the group Gangstar, he was a DJ in Gangstar. So he tries
to... Eminem use him in something? DJ Premier.
Maybe Eminem.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, he really likes the Gangstar kind of sound, which is more like strings, more sample heavy. So in 2000, he pressed 200 copies himself of the single. What is it here? Has It Come to This? Do you know that? Has It Come to This?
No.
It's kind of more of like a club banger. And that's the thing about.
How old is he now? Because if you're telling me 15 still.
No, this is 2000, so he's probably about like 23, maybe.
All right.
So yeah, Has It Come to This?
It's a very British age.
Why?
I don't know.
So yeah, he presses 200 copies of Has It Come to This, and so this is like the club scene in London and stuff. If you're like in the dance music industry kind of thing, you don't put out albums really. You're really just putting out
singles.
What do they call them? Like 12 inch? No, 7 inches. I think it's a 7 inch when it's a single.
8 inch.
So he
is he under the streets now or Mike Skinner?
No, this is the streets.
All right, so he starts the streets when?
This is 2000. He starts calling it the streets. So initially he kind of has like an entourage. It's not really like other people rapping in it. I think it's another guy that like sings in it.
All right,
or something like that.
Yeah, you hear some kind of singing. Same guy that does a couple things.
And but he's primarily the streets. It's like Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor kind of thing, right?
Yep.
So he sends these 200 copies of Has It Come to This to local clubs in London, and people instantly connect with it. It just gets the attention of everybody that's in like this like UK garage scene, right? And it's a cool song. He alludes to the title of the next album, which is Original Pirate Material, or I'm sorry, the first album of the streets.
Yeah.
And so it kind of reminds me of early Massive Attack. I don't know if you're like –
I'm not that familiar with Massive Attack, but I am pretty familiar with this album.
Okay, cool. If anybody knows Massive Attack, it sounds like it could almost be a track off of Blue Lines, which is Massive Attack's first album. And that, for me, when I listened to it, I instantly connected with it myself. And I was like, wow, this is really fucking cool.
Right.
Flow and
rap-wise, what do you feel?
It's all over the place. Like, if you listen to Mike Skinner's flow, it sounds more like beat poetry than it does rap, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the chorus is something like, original pirate material, you listen to the streets. And it's, like, off the timing.
That's what I felt when that first time I heard it on MTV. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It just sounds like the cat is running across the keyboard,
right.
And he's just like, let's use it.
Right. Now you made him sound like a 1970s British rocker guy. Like, slag off!
Slag off, scallywogs. Take a pisser in the dingo. Oh, fuck, I guess. There I go.
Oi, baby, eat my dingo.
He left Australia, that's right.
Right, yeah.
With his heart broken by Kiefer.
He got dumped by a girl named Kiefer. Man, that's good. So, I don't know. It's just really cool. I mean, if you're not familiar with Mike Skinner, I would say that the best way to start is You're Fit, But Don't You Know It. It's probably the most like American pop-wise that you can kind of sync up with, maybe.
Yeah. I'd have to say maybe that would be true.
You know what I mean? It's more straightforward.
There's some lingo in there that's a bit, but...
Yeah, and like getting into the streets, too.
Fit means hot, basically, there, right?
Exactly, yeah. Fit means you're in really good shape, mm-hmm. So yeah. I love English because it's so different than what we're used to in the States.
But it makes sense when you hear it. You're like, yeah, fit. That's
yeah, right. It's like the more
I get it.
That is funny. So basically, he starts getting attention and he gets on this UK label called Locked In.
Now I remember when. Wait, where are you now? What year?
This is still 2000.
All right.
So 2000, he gets on this label, Locked In, and they're like UK garage. They're doing all the dance singles. I think they're UK garage at this point is more R&B heavy, so it's more dancey and more
soul,
kind of like disco. Kind of remember like disco was like a dancey beat with like more of an R&B kind of singing soul. Yeah, like you said over it. So he kind of transforms his UK garage into his own sound. So 2001. Locked On releases Has It Come to This as a proper single.
So English.
I know. Most UK garage songs rarely got past the single. That's what I was saying earlier.
So he's like 24 here?
Yeah, like I would say like he's mid-20s at this point. Like 24,
so
25.
So English of an age.
Why?
I don't know. It just sounds
that
like
makes
it.
Sense. Yeah, so they released it as a proper singer, most UK garage. yeah, so because it's getting this limited release as a single, it's getting passed around in all the clubs in the UK at this point. People are connecting with it. They really like it. And Lockdown releases original pirate material in 2002 and 2003 in the States.
Oh, all right. So yeah, I must have heard it then, maybe.
Original pirate material is apparently just a huge hit. Trying to think of what was the reggae song that you were talking about?
Let's Push Things Forward.
Let's Push Things Forward is on that.
Is Don't Mug Yourself, I think, is on that.
Don't Mug Yourself is on that.
The Irony of It All.
The Irony of It All, that's the pot versus alcohol song. And, yeah, it's just that geezer culture that we were talking about. It's just regular, like, going to the pub, having a drink. And people really resonated with the idea that, you know, you could just be a regular guy and still rap and still do your thing. But it's crazy to me that, like you were saying, it's not very dancey, would you say, right?
No.
Yet it's getting a lot of play in clubs and people are, like, dancing to it and DJs are cutting it into...
Are they doing it ironically?
I've watched a couple, like, live street shows. And it's really funny watching English people kind of vibe with something and get into it. It's very different than what we're used to here, you know? I'm like, oh, man, that's...
Are they all, like, doing ecstasy kind of stuff?
Yeah, club? I would think so. Yeah, like...
I know he has some songs on the thing later on about...
Yeah, Blinded by Lights, I think, is about ecstasy. Yeah, he's very into that club drug culture, which probably is very similar to American club drug culture. And, you know, dude, me, I've never grown up listening to club music. I'm sure you haven't, really. Yeah. So
this is Ace of Base, which I don't know if that's the same.
Ace of Base.
Is that club music?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Then yes, an Aqua.
But, yeah, that would be a good album I would say people should check out because, you know, it was weird. It came out to mixed reviews. I remember when I first got into the streets, probably like 2003, 4, something like that, reading something on a forum or maybe a YouTube video comment that was like an English guy was like, I am from England and I just want to personally apologize for the streets firsthand. So for the main...
Haters.
So Skinner goes on a world tour. And when he finally gets to the U.S., there's producers that want him to star in a Quadrophenia-type film. And people that are a fan of the band The Who would be like Tommy or something like that, like a Quadrophenia, right? And they want to make it about modern youth culture. So Skinner pretty much turns it down because he's like, I'm not an actor and I can't really do this.
Oh, Skin Rash would do that.
Come on, Skin Rash. But yeah, so yeah, he turns it down. But it's kind of interesting because he's not really known here in the States, but yet he could have had a huge blow-up moment right there, and he turns it down. Like, I'm like, why not do this rap opera with this guy and, like, do, like, a movie, right?
I mean, we haven't heard of it, though, have we?
What do you mean?
Now. He turned it down. They probably still made it, right?
I don't know if they did. It? No, I mean, I don't know if they actually did, actually. Mm. You might be right. They might have, like, chopped and skewed that into something else, though, you know?
Yeah.
So
the old chop and skewed, I think they call that in England.
Yeah.
Getting the old chop and skewed, something proper, eh?
Chopped and skewed. 2003. So here. Okay, by 2003, Skinner is like the biggest thing in England, which is crazy to me. Like,
Isn't it?
Which is crazy to me because, again, like, I'm sure most people listening to this probably haven't even heard of the streets, right? And they blow up over there. So Mike Skinner seems to be getting kind of like a big head about him being famous. He's a pretty laid-back guy, and he seems pretty cool. He actually seems really cool when I listen to him in interviews.
You could tell, yeah, in his music, he starts. You could tell he starts getting a big head. Even in those three albums, you could see it.
Yeah, him starting to get kind of. So he at this point he kind of does like a Henry Rollins thing where he starts shit talking other bands a little bit. I read something where he quote unquote slagged off Radiohead.
Oh, they needed a good slagging off though.
And basically what he said about Radiohead is that, and this is paraphrasing, that they had to be so artsy because they really had nothing to say in their music.
Hmm.
I'm like, ouch, that's pretty rough. I think that he called, people might be familiar with this guy, Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
I think he called Aphex Twin a knob jockey. Yeah, and he also had a beef with, what's his name, the lead singer of Blur.
Oh, Damien
Albarn?
Albarn.
Yeah, Damien Albarn. Or Damon Albarn.
Damon.
Damon Albarn. And I think Damon Albarn was probably upset because he was kind of doing the street sound before the streets. Are you familiar with the song Park Life?
Yeah, absolutely.
That kind
of, it does sound like the streets. I remember you told me that. You were like, dude, you got to listen to this song if you like the streets. And I listened to it. I was like, holy shit, this is kind of like the streets.
Yeah. So if you're a Blur fan and you don't know the streets, it's Park Life pretty much. So, yeah. So, yeah, he had a lot of beef with English people, apparently, or English musicians, I should say. So when he wasn't touring at this point, and we're in 2003 and he's always touring, he's just working on music. He's trying to get better and better and better, and he's more of a producer guy. I mentioned the thing about RZA, where RZA's not really a rapper. And
yeah.
His main motivation to even rapping was the fact that he didn't want somebody else to have the burden of being to their very best to his beats. So he was just like, I don't want to put this on somebody else. It's all on me. So I think that's kind of cool. At this point, I think the entourage he was hanging out with that were kind of rapping with him and kind of singing with him were just all doing drugs and all just kind of like jerk-offs.
Slagging off.
Slagging off. And
typical.
He basically, everybody associates this name, The Streets, with Mike Skinner. Eventually, so he gets a distribution deal with Vice Records, and I think that's Vice TV, like Vice.com.
You think that's the same?
I'm pretty sure. Rich, can you look up Vice Records, please? But I think that's pretty much the... Yeah, it's like Vice Videos, Vice Media. And so, okay, so he gets this distribution deal with Vice, and he releases the single Fit But Don't You Know It.
Oh my God, don't you just know it.
The single eventually, if anybody is a fan of the FIFA games, I think it's in FIFA 2005, maybe.
The video game?
Yeah, the video game.
It's Vice Media LLC.
Okay, cool. Vice Media LLC. Music and records. Yeah, so that makes perfect sense. I mean, Vice, the Vice Land or whatever has all that shit. Like, Mike Skinner, I believe, ends up doing stuff with Vice and Noisy.
All right.
Right?
This is the album. It follows a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
From beginning to end. So, and I remember I read an article in this. It was like some magazine called like Ages or something. I can't remember. But it was like something about just like classic rock and just like music that you're going to be listening to for a long time. Eric Clapton was on a cover, I think, when it was. And it had this whole article about the streets and this album.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, that's really weird that it'd be in an album like this rap album.
Hmm.
And they're like, yeah, it's really interesting. It follows each song, goes into the next, and it follows a whole story.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. This guy is literally as popular as Eminem got in our country. He's as popular over there in England.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that makes perfect sense that he would be in that same kind of category. And, again, when you first listen to this guy, it's just like, how is this that popular over there? But I guess it was just different enough. It's the same thing kind of like, I think Syd Barrett got quoted or got credit for this verse, but that, and then the Sex Pistols later, that singing outside of sounding like you're American.
Yeah, all right.
You know, like even like, you know, Robert Plant or whoever, so always sounded like an American blues kind of singer guy. but yeah, this is the album he releases A Grand Don't Come for Free the same year. And like you were saying, it tells a story. And the story's kind of cool, actually. It's just like a regular...
Running out of money. Being late. Like, he's trying to... The first song, he's getting up. He's trying to return a video so he can meet his mom. He has no money in the bank account. And the video he left, the DVD wasn't in there. And it's just like a whole shitstorm. And
so the story is like, about him... Thinking that he has a grand, he loses the grand. Behind a TV.
And at the end, he finds the grand, and his friends, he told his friends to fuck off because he thought he stole it. And then he gets in a fight with the TV repairman to fix the little bit around the back, as he quote says. And then after he's laying there, after the TV repairman beats him up, he breaks up with his girlfriend, and this time it's a crazy story.
Get out of my house.
No, seriously. No, I didn't
Please
think it was like that.
Just leave me.
No, not again now. No, it's like last week.
Yeah.
I thought the same. I mean,
oi, fair play, fair
You know,
play.
That thing you do. I can't remember what it was specifically.
Yeah.
That thing, you know, whatever. I'll never darken your towels again. She's fit. Fitter than you.
Yeah, right.
And then it goes right into... Dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
dun,
I like... Dun. I would say that this is probably my favorite album.
It was a great one.
Yeah, and it flows really nicely. I like that it's a concept album. I've always, like, had a thing for concept albums. Chris Martin was almost on this album from Coldplay, and apparently he did the song, but I guess it was maybe the label that told him that it wasn't a good idea, and they ended up shelving the track. I forget what song he was originally supposed to be on, but yeah, they don't release it. In 2005, he starts his own band called The Beats.
Ooh, very original.
I like it. But this is part of his appeal. He's
now,
just...
is it like spelt like, is it like The Beats, like the Doug Funny? Is it spelt like B-E-A-T-S or B-E-E-T-S?
No. B-E-A. Yeah, typical.
He's B-E-A?
Yeah. But
like, is that just, come on, The Beatles, The Beats, The Streets, The Street, The Beats.
Yeah.
Like,
I actually
Doug
saw
Funny Band, The Beats.
Yeah, The Beats is, so that is his label.
Beats by Mike Skinner.
Yeah.
Didn't do as well as Dre, but.
No. Well enough, I would say. Well, actually, we're going to get into that. He releases then The Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living on, I guess it's On the Beats. On the Beats.
Yeah, that one's a bit.
Yeah, I didn't really care
it's
for it,
the
really.
Hardest way. Yeah, it's, the main single, what is it, when you're a famous boy, it gets very easy to get girls.
Is that When You Was Famous?
When You Wasn't Famous.
Oh, When You Wasn't Famous, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
that
a cool song. I like that, but the overall, he has one song.
It's about him
there.
Doing coke and smoking crack with famous people and people getting it on tape and him getting pissed.
Yeah.
Because he can't do lines of coke because people take out their camera phones.
And this is what I like about Mike Skinner, too. There's no, like... him trying to hide anything about himself or anything. He's very real. He has a song called Fake Streets Hats on the album, and it was an incident that happened in 2004. He was at the Belgian Pukkelpop Festival, and apparently he was really drunk, and he protested against the handing out of white hats with the streets written on them because he thought it was bootleg material.
Oh, what a douche. It's a real Lars moment.
Yeah, so he's like screaming, like, "Oi, this isn't my thing!" And
you gazers,
you fucking gazer. And then the hats were actually
yeah, fucking cunts. That's what they say over there a lot.
Yeah, I would have to attest to that. That the word "cunt" in England seems like the word "the" here in America. But
what does this cunt do next?
He didn't. So this cunt basically, what he does is. He doesn't realize that the hats are actually a gift from his label.
Oh.
So he shows humility here, and he writes a song about how he was wrong in this whole thing, I guess. And then, yeah.
I
like
love the name Fake Streets Hats.
Fake Streets Hats.
To the point,
my Exactly. But that's what's cool about him. Like, everything is, like, straightforward, straight to the point. Like, he's not trying to be artsy or whatever. Yeah. And everyone looks in. I feel like people in England kind of look into him like he's, like, more of this deep poet because he's so simple in what he does.
Yeah.
And even when you hear him in interviews similar to us on this podcast, he's all about the ums and likes. He's like, yeah, so like, you
sounds
know.
Sounds like you fucking just reading off.
Yeah, sounds like me reading my show notes. Except he's just being real, you know. 2007.
Just being real going under the name The Streets.
Yeah. That's yeah. That would be like if you had a band called the Bulldogs and it was just you.
Insane Clown Posse, but there's only two of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the smallest posse you can have, but it is a posse technically.
So 2007, the Beats record label dissolves.
Makes sense.
Yeah, he's like trying to put out local rappers under this, and you know, people don't want it. They want the streets. They want what he's doing. You know.
Now, yeah, this is where I don't know anything else.
Yeah, this is kind of where I fall off with him a little bit too. 2008, he releases Everything Is Borrowed. The only song
except the White Hats, they were stolen.
I say, yeah. He releases a song called The Escapist. And, you know, he's not like this money-hungry guy, too. Like, even though he does the White Hats song or whatever, he doesn't give a fuck. He releases his single off this album completely for free to download. Mm. And he has an accompanying video that goes with him, directed by Ted Mayhem.
No, not the Ted Mayhem?
Oh, yes, the very... You know,
the wrestler? What is this guy?
I have no idea. Yeah, right. I really did. I didn't have time to look into him, but
you just had time to bring him up.
Yeah, pretty much. I want to give credit where credit's due here. So the music video is cool because he follows Skinner as he walks 770 miles from Dover in England, to a beach in France.
Wait, that's not Dover, New Jersey? Oh, I thought that was our New Jersey tie-in.
Yeah, is there a New Jersey tie-in?
No, there's no Jersey tie-in that I found.
The Jersey, the Isle of Jersey, maybe. But
maybe,
not...
yeah, the original old Jersey, as they call it over there. But, yeah, which is pretty cool. It's a cool video. It's a kind of a stop-motion thing, just him walking. And, again, people, like, kind of look at it where it's just like, oh, my God, he's so Aussie. He's walked 770 miles. Well... What is that? 800 something kilometers. Yeah.
But then no one thought like a Forrest Gump thing here or the Pretenders all walk.
Oh, that would be good.
5,000 miles.
I would walk 770 kilometers. So, yeah, the video is pretty cool, though. He also has a track called Who Knows Who. And he recorded it with the band Muse.
Ooh.
So it's weird. Like, he talks shit about...
So English.
Obviously, but... I mean, he talks shit about people that, like, basically talk shit about him. But people, like, real music people love the shit out of the guy.
Chris Martin and fucking...
Them, yeah. Yeah, Muse. That's pretty big, you know? In 2011, he really...
Paul McCartney did that song with him, right?
Yeah. That would be pretty cool, actually.
That'd be terrible.
I saw a YouTube comment where somebody compared...
That'd be like a Lulu.
Mike Skinner to a modern-day John Lennon. Like, he's the only poet that came out of England since John Lennon. I was like, oh, I guess so. Yeah.
We all wish he was shot.
Oh, Jesus. 2011, he releases the album Cyberspace and Reds. The album was initially released only for download via the Streets iPhone app.
Okay, sorry. That's why I never heard that one. Go fuck yourself.
You know, nowadays, 2017, everybody's got an app for everything. So I'm going to say Mike Skinner was, trailblazer there.
Yeah, he could have worked for Innovative.
Yeah, maybe.
He's a real inventor.
Yeah. Users of the app were required to scan one barcode displayed on the website.
So it wasn't just on the app. You had to go fucking...
So here's what you had to do.
Take your phone, go to a computer.
Yes.
Go to a
library. So you had to download the app from the iStore. You had
to
go to the
computer.
I don't know. I didn't really... No, it was free. It was free. It was free app. So you go and you download the app. You have to use the phone's camera to scan a barcode.
So you have to buy that scanning barcode. You have to download that app, too.
No. You just went to the website... So it would be like you went to the, like, I guess it was like the streets.com or something. There's a barcode there. You took the app. You scanned the barcode off the computer screen.
All right, so you didn't need to download also that barcode app.
No. It was just,
all right,
yeah, because the camera on your phone can scan it, right? So much is fucking ridiculous. But he got
it was made by Cinco. Yeah. Most complicated way to do anything.
This is a little bit before maybe a lot of people's times. This is when the internet was just on a CD-ROM.
2,000 hours of it for free.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But, yeah, so he got the barcode little... oh, man, do people remember pop-up video? I was about to say a little pop-up. Yeah. Pop-up video. That might be
they
before.
They still play them. From
do they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
VH1 classic.
Goddamn. So, little pop-up video kind of factoid here. He got the barcode from a side of 300-gram tin of tomato soup by a well-known brand, and then in parentheses, for some reason I have, the brand turns out to be Heinz.
I didn't even know Heinz made, was it ketchup?
Yeah, soup? Like, yeah.
I didn't know Heinz made soup.
300-gram tin of tomatoes. English people.
That is the most English thing I've ever heard.
You know, I would like to say, like, could you just stop at the metric system first, or a metric system thing, please? But first off, we're the ones that are wrong, because we don't do the metric system.
In the 80s, we tried, but couldn't.
Yeah, we're just,
nah, and the parents were like, I don't fucking know. It doesn't matter. You want to grow up in Russia? Move to Russia then. Yeah. Fuck this.
We do hogshead over here. Give me one hogshead of oil, please.
Chase me around the garden with a bit of wood.
With a bit of wood. 2011, Skinner releases his final album.
Skinny boy.
As The Streets. And this is called Computers in Blue. And yeah, I guess this is like a real album. You don't have to have The Streets app to do it. But it's at this time that, yeah, he's kind of done with the idea of The Streets. I think he was saying that he just really didn't have anything more to say, really.
He's rich now, so he can't keep it real and be such a simple.
That's what's cool about Skinner. Like, even I know we were saying like he got kind of a big head about himself, but he always seems to keep himself.
Oh,
in
I thought
check.
You meant just physically. His head is gigantic. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's more English. Yeah, yeah. But you know, he always keeps himself in check. Like he. Yeah, I don't know. He, like you said, he wants to keep it real kind of thing. Keep it real. But he reopens his label, The Beats, and then in 2012, he teams up with, you probably never heard of this band, this English band called The Music.
The Muse, yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, I like them.
This guy, Rob Harvey, they do this album or this collaboration called The D.O.T., and they released...
Dio?
That would be pretty sweet if it was Dio. But no, the D.O.T. Rich, can you Google what the D.O.T. stands for? Right? D.O.T. band. Oh, that's pretty good. Anybody listen to this, let's all create a page for the D.O.T. together. Yeah, I don't know what it stands for. Their music's pretty cool. They released, I think it was two albums as the D.O.T. They're kind of like, what's that band? Sleigh Bells? Not Sleigh Bells. What's that collaboration band with Danger Mouse? Kind of like Sleigh Bells. Maybe it is Sleigh Bells.
Not Sleigh Bells.
I forget the name
Broken
of it.
Bells?
Broken Bells. Yeah, it kind of sounds like Broken Bells a little bit, where it's like hip-hop but like alt-rock kind of sounding thing, you know? Yeah, and then between now and 2012, Skinner kind of he did the D.O.T. thing, and then I think he started doing documentaries with Vice and Noisy.com.
Mm.
And I guess he's getting back into music right now. He's going to be doing a tour with The Streets in England. Ooh. And apparently it's every show sold out already.
Damn, I was going to say, let's go.
That would be pretty. Wouldn't it be sweet to go to England and go to one of these Streets shows? I would fucking love that, man. But what's cool about them performing live, too, is that he's got a live band behind him. So he does a lot of his own production, a lot of typical hip-hop kind of thing. But he actually performs with a real band.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's pretty much all I got on him, man. So what do you think? Bigger fan of The Streets? Interesting? Like,
Yeah, it wasn't that interesting. It wasn't that crazy of a story. It was
cool to be able to, like,
Know more about them and where
to know
it came
about
from.
More about them, and if we can reach out to more people and kind of open it, like get them known to a bigger crowd, because he is worth a listen to. But yeah, there's not a lot of controversy. He's just a very down to earth guy, very chill. I feel like he's the kind of guy you can approach in a bar and just be like, hey man, you know, hey, you're the fucking Streets guy, you're the push things forward guy,
you're the forward geezer,
hey. But Yeah, yeah. Who's going to play Mike Skinner in a movie?
Who
does he look like?
You know who I think could play a good Mike Skinner? Fuck, what's the guy's name? Freeman. The guy...
Morgan Freeman?
Morgan Freeman.
Richard.
Yeah.
Wait, he'll play himself like Eminem did. Cause he's, as Mike said a couple of times, America's thing of Eminem.
Yeah, pretty... he's to England
answer.
As Eminem is to America, yeah. Yeah, I can't think of anybody who would play him because he's such like a normal looking guy and everything about him is just pretty
English.
I'm trying to think of a good maybe. You know who could play him? Maybe Tim Roth. He plays everything pretty well.
He's a bit older than him, but all right.
Maybe Gary Oldman.
I don't know.
Maybe Sir Elton John.
So recommendations.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the second one.
Grand Don't Come for Free.
The Grand Don't Come for Free.
That one's the most cohesive of all his albums. Yeah. I really enjoy that one, too. But even original pirate material is pretty good.
Yeah, even the one after it has a couple of all right ones.
Yeah.
They're not great, but...
Yeah, but he, you know, he's a fun listen to. He's definitely good, like, background party music kind of thing, if anything.
For a really tweaked out party.
Yeah. If you're into a really hipster kind of thing, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. Like, it was fun looking up the streets. Again, check us out at Voluble Radio on Twitter. And, yeah, again, you can also email us at volubleradiopodcast@gmail.com if you have any bands that you like us. Recommendations, anything. If you have music you want to turn us on to.
Fix any of the things we got wrong.
Yeah, please. Yeah, especially that. If we get anything wrong in any of these bands, please correct us. We definitely want to know better. But, yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. And
hello.
We'll see you next time.
My name's Harry and I'm a lawbinder. There's nothing more I like than getting fired up.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Voluble Radio. For more episodes, you can hear us over at volubleradio.com or subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. We do want your feedback and suggestions, so email us at volubleradiopodcast@gmail.com.